I'm going to begin with some background. In February, Kevin, our friend Mark Smith, and I traveled to El Salvador. We went to explore the possibility of establishing a sister relationship between our church and the village of Plazuelas, which is in the north-central region of the country, 10 minutes by bus from Honduras. This all came about through Mark Smith, who traveled to El Salvador last year and met a young man named Alcides from Plazuelas, who was in search of community connections in the U.S. Mark's church already has a sister relationship with a community in Nicaragua, and so he turned to Kevin and me. After months of conversations and exchanging photos and information about our communities, conversations here at TPC as well, we decided that we needed to make an in-person visit, and we're here today to tell you what we found. Before February, I had never seen El Salvador. It was a country that I knew first through books, newspapers, and films. I had a sense of a land torn asunder, first by the bloody civil war of the 1980s, and now by gang violence and systemic corruption. I also understood that the mass exodus of Salvadorans to this country, both in the 80s and ever since, is a transnational problem in which we are not just the passive victims. We have been and continue to be an active historical participant in the instability that generated these waves of migration. During the war, when our government contributed over $6 billion of aid to fund the right-wing military government's ruthless, dirty war against the leftist FMLN, and today, when firearms trafficked from the U.S. into Central America fuel both gang violence and drug cartels, which are also fed in large part by drug consumption in our own country. More central to my pre-Plazuelas image of El Salvador were scores of personal stories from Salvadoran immigrants and refugees, people who have impressed me as uncommonly kind-hearted and brave. Josue, our recent guest in Sanctuary, told us tales of his childhood, painting a picture of simple subsistence farms, meager meals, partially clothed kids, and schooling rarely completed beyond a few grades. From Central American women, asylum seekers in a Texas detention center, I've heard heartbreaking tales of family members killed, adolescent daughters and young sons recruited by gangs, of threats and extortion, of corrupt or negligent police. I have relived their arduous journeys to the U.S., the long walks and bus rides, the people smugglers, the scramble for temporary jobs to fund the next leg of the journey. For me, these immigrants are models of resilience, humble warriors who stand strong even in their vulnerability. So traveling to Plazuelas felt something like a pilgrimage, or at least a Unitarian Universalist version of one. Yes, I discovered many things, that the jagged Salvadoran landscape punctuated by mountains and volcanoes is beautiful, that this whole country is the size of Massachusetts, there are tourists, Starbucks, and Uber drivers, and that gang activity is invisible to careful travelers and many Salvadorans. But what stands out most for me from this trip are moments of deep respect and compassion for the justice martyrs and great losses of the Civil War, and also for the emigrants of our times and for the ones they leave behind in the barrios of San Salvador and villages like Plazuelas. I would have liked to visit La Brea, the tiny caserío or cluster of houses in southeast El Salvador where Josue grew up, but Plazuelas was the community that reached out to us, and it was a good stand-in, equally remote and rural. Now in Plazuelas, as in Josue's village, there is TV, internet, running water, and a paved road. There's even a bus that passes through twice daily. But this village of 76 families and approximately 400 people has only one small store, a two-room elementary school with a leaky metal roof, a church, a community house, and the promise of a daycare center. Medical care is available once a week from a visiting nurse or doctor, but anything urgent or serious requires significant travel. There are no cafes or restaurants, and informal social life seems to center on one large shade tree across from the store. From the minute we arrived at that tree, we were celebrities, escorted everywhere by gaggles of children and helpful adults with water bottles and sun umbrellas. The town council went out of its way to welcome us, making introductions, setting us up with our host families, leading us uphill to a banquet of chicken, tortillas, soup, salad, etc. Our two-day agenda included countless meals, three meetings with the town council, a hike up to the water tank that now supplies Plazuelas, a tour of the church, the school, and the daycare site, and a long evening of song, dance, and skits prepared especially for us by the town teenagers. Gender equality, immigration, domestic violence, these were the main focus of the young people's skits, thanks largely to their work with an NGO devoted to promoting awareness of social and climate issues. The Plazuela School was another pleasant surprise, since we learned that cost-free public education through the eighth grade is now the norm in El Salvador, including textbooks, fees, uniforms, and one new pair of shoes per child each year. Even now, children in Plazuelas get only half days of classes because space and teachers are scarce. There's no budget for substitutes, so if their teacher needs 6 weeks to recover from an operation, which happened recently, they all just miss school and try to catch up. And for most kids in Plazuelas, school and travel costs mean that a high school education is simply beyond their reach. What was most striking in Plazuelas, especially for Mark Smith, who knew this town in the early 90s, were the visible effects of remittances, regular infusions of US dollars sent back home from family members in the United States. Something like 80% of the families in Plazuelas have children or close relatives living in the US, primarily in Los Angeles and Virginia. I remember that Josue had proudly told me how his family home now had cement instead of dirt floors, a new roof, and an extra room, thanks to money he was able to send his father. And this is what we saw in Plazuelas, bigger houses made of better materials, and even a small building boom that has generated a move away from traditional subsistence farming. Working construction in Plazuelas, you can earn $10 a day. And now, at least from what we could see, everyone seemed to have enough to eat. And still we wondered how sustainable this new remittance-based economy might be, and we also saw its costs. While older Salvadorans are still struggling with the scars and losses of the war, now families of all generations are torn and separated across national boundaries. This nation is still ripped apart. Our initial contact, 34-year-old Alcides, told us that he had worked in Los Angeles 3 years and decided to come home when he realized he was crying every day. Wilma, the mother of the family I stayed with, sadly told me how two of her three children living in Los Angeles are struggling with homesickness and depression. Yet the people of Plazuelas are warm, open, and generous. We left town laden with gifts, apples, green mangoes, Honduran embroidered cloth. More enduring were the intangibles, stories, insights, new relationships, and deepened appreciation for global connections. All three of us could see very clearly that the people of Plazuelas are eager to build a partnership with Theodore Parker Church. What they mean by that and exactly how we might envision that relationship remain unclear. What is clear is that they want to be seen. People in Plazuelas want to feel accompanied, to have friends in Boston who are interested in their well-being and even willing to visit, ready to engage in intercultural dialogue and learning. I'd wager the same is true for many of us here. We all want to be seen. Last week, I read a David Brooks column in the New York Times about Cory Booker, who in his political rallies uses the language of the African Methodist Episcopal Church in which he was raised. Brooks quotes Booker when he writes, "Love means I see you. I see your worth. I see your dignity. Your destiny is my destiny." That same notion of love was at the heart of Archbishop Romero's faith. Today, my friends in Plazuelas are in their church celebrating his feast day. Romero was killed for speaking truth to power, for serving as the voice of the voiceless, for publicly begging members of the Salvadoran military to disobey orders to kill. When I was trying to explain Unitarian Universalism to my 20-year-old Plazuelas host, Norma, she interrupted me in shock. So you Unitarians don't believe Monsignor Romero was a saint? Well, I don't know about everyone else, but I do, I assured her. And I'm glad to honor this special day with everyone in Plazuelas and with all of you.
Now you get another one of those. Beth has given us a beautiful rendering of our exploration of a connection with the community of Plazuelas, El Salvador, and especially of our short visit there in February. My hope is to share a little bit about what that experience made me think about the connection between accompaniment and spiritual journey. We began today's service with the words of Dean Brackley, a white, male, highly educated Jesuit priest from the suburbs of Baltimore. Perhaps not the easiest person for all of us here to identify with. Nonetheless, let me ask you to suspend judgment for just a heartbeat and look at the experience that led to today's opening words. In 1989, Dean was in his late 40s, having lived quite an interesting life combining academic work with connection to all kinds of social justice organizing in the U.S. At that moment, he was teaching courses at Fordham University and working with some challenging faith-based community organizing projects in the Bronx. He described his life as comfortable and fulfilling, with strong connections to a variety of communities. While he had certainly connected with Jesuit-supported social justice projects around the world, by his own admission, he was gently skeptical of those who felt that they needed to go great distances to accompany the poor on their path to liberation. Then, in November 1989, something happened. A group of elite Salvadoran military commandos, some of whom had just completed a training exercise with U.S. Army Delta Force trainers, entered the Jesuit University under cover of darkness and awakened the six members of the Jesuit community who were present. The well-armed invaders then dragged the six in their pajamas into the beautiful little garden at the rear of their residence and brutally murdered them. As they left the scene, our valiant commandos found a woman who worked with the Jesuits hiding with her daughter in a room at the residence. And of course, there could be no witnesses to this atrocity, so the women died as well. Beth, our friend Mark Smith, and I visited this sacred garden during the San Salvador portion of our trip. In the wake of this tragedy, a call went out to Jesuits around the world to consider stepping into the abyss created by this madness. That set in motion a whirlwind of events that would carry our friend Dean from a comfy residence at Fordham to much more humble digs in San Salvador in less than 3 weeks. Later on, he could not easily recall the sequence or the details of that whirlwind. When asked 6 months later if he would talk with a group of church leaders from United Church of Christ congregations in Vermont to help them understand the experience of being in the country at that moment, he said, "I just got here, and I'm wondering every day if I can stay. What could I possibly have to say that could help your friends?" But under gentle pressure, he agreed to have that conversation, the first of probably 400 such conversations that Dean would have over the next 25 years with visitors from around the world. The words at the beginning of our service were directed to 14 Vermonters, but those words certainly also represent Dean's attempt to verbalize some of the challenges he faced as he searched for the meaning of accompaniment in his new life. For him, this was an intensely spiritual search. Were he sitting here among us, Dean would rise from his seat and dispute very loudly any notion that his struggles with the place of accompaniment in his life in El Salvador had anything to do with the spiritual struggles faced by Oscar Romero as he imagined the implications of coming home to a life of accompaniment of the poor. But Dean is not here, at least not in any way that can be detected by our senses. So I suggest that we consider whether or not there is a common thread there to be acknowledged. Rereading his words certainly brought me back to that time, But the words also brought me back to many other times as well. Have the courage to lose control. Have the courage to feel useless. Have the courage to listen. Have the courage to receive. Do these words bring to mind the experience, for any of you, of sitting or sleeping for long hours in that room at Bethel AME in support of our guest, Josue? They certainly have that effect on me. Have the courage to let your heart be broken. Have the courage to feel. Have the courage to fall in love. Have the courage to get ruined for life. Have the courage to make a friend. Reaching out, reaching in. Over the past few years, the relationship between our congregation and the community around us has changed in a way that few of us could have predicted. The deepening work of TPC members with the UU Urban Ministry, the extraordinary experience of placing a table out in front of this church and talking with our neighbors about racism, our year-long support of Josue and his struggle to live a life with some semblance of normality in a country insistent on considering him as other. These are only a few of so many examples how all of you have transformed the relationship of this church to the world around us. The exploration of a Plazuelas Parker project, and I love those P's, presents itself as one more opportunity for such transformation. So, what does any of this have to do with our ongoing acts of reaching in, of creating a space for deepening the spiritual life of each of us who calls this place home, as well as the spiritual connections among us? The idea of supporting a spiritual journey that is intensely personal for each of us is and will remain a weight-bearing pillar of this community. That there is room in that journey for the outward-looking work of accompaniment seems clear, but the relationship between the two remains something that we continue to address every single time we come together. I, for one, cannot imagine a more important thing for us to be discussing and creating. May it be so.